Welcome to Crunching the Numbers, going inside and breaking down the game and finding out what all the data means.
Well, welcome to another episode of Crunching the Numbers. I'm your host, Mark Sefolas from the Tennis Menu, and we are joined by co-host, the man with the numbers, the man who counts sheep in his sleep. It's Mr. Shane Leonard from Data Driven Sports Analytics. Thank you, Shane, once again for joining us.
Hi, everyone. I certainly don't count sheep in my sleep. I fall over sleep straight away. So no, it's great to be back. And yeah, I think we've been now on court for a couple of weeks since the restrictions have eased. So it's great that I'm seeing so much social media, seeing not only the tour players having a hit, but most recreational players back on court.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice to see people getting back to some normality. And obviously the pro players are starting to get back some training load into them. And, you know, I read Nadal was talking about he was basically doing nothing. He was in a place where he had no tennis court and he couldn't do anything for a few months, and quite an amazing thing that our world's going through. But it's good to see the players are back into it. And, you know, obviously Nadal, who we're going to speak a little bit about now in what we're about to do, is, you know, obviously just had a nice freshen up and he's ready to go again. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Nadal in a different way. We've decided that we're going to talk about how we look at a hypothetical scenario. And you're going to bring me some numbers, being obviously the data guru that you are. And we're going to talk about a match scenario. And we're looking at Nadal versus Zverev. And we're going to look at how we plan to play if we were coaching each one of them, how it would look in terms of strategy from the numbers that you provide to what the coach is able to do and what the coach is able to plan for. So Nadal Zverev is an interesting matchup because they've had some really interesting tussles over the time, Shane. And, you know, you've mentioned to me in the past that some of the ploys that Zverev used against Nadal have worked. And we talked in a previous episode about the way Berdych plays Nadal. And I think Zverev's taken a little bit of a leaf out of Berdych's book at times in the way that he plays him. And, you know, I'll start with you and what your numbers are telling us about this matchup.
And I think it was deliberate by us to sort of pick this matchup because Zverev's had a little bit of success in matches against Nadal, but he's only beaten him once in London last year. But Nadal's had the rest of the head-to-heads really been in Nadal's favour, despite the close matches. And good to sort of unpick this from a data perspective. But then, as Mark touched on, there are certain tactics that Zverev can actually use. So Berdych was one that Mark mentioned, but also tactics that Djokovic uses that we feel that Zverev can actually implement himself as well. So might start off with sort of a game plan that we would potentially come up with. The first thing's around really attacking the Nadal forehand. And this is something that might shock people. We've seen plenty of video where Nadal's hitting, you know, there's banana bending forehand up the line, or he's passing from ridiculous places in the court. But the data does show that if you're in an attack and you go to the Nadal forehand, there's an opportunity for you there. Start there.
Very interesting starting point, because everyone looks at Nadal's forehand as the weapon, and it is. Nadal's forehand is a weapon when he's able to set his feet up. And, you know, obviously he can play from all parts of the court, but when he has time to set up and when he has time to swing, you're in a bit of trouble, because he gets the ball flight, he gets the spin, he gets that ball getting over the net with a certain amount of height and shape that it pushes you way back. And, you know, obviously, like you said, the banana bender forehand is a really challenging one to play, and one that a lot of players struggle to hold their court on. So what you need to be doing is, generally, I always talk to the players about your biggest strength is sometimes your biggest weakness. And even though Nadal is able to penetrate the court from that forehand side, he's also very susceptible on that side as well. And he wants to set up in his backhand corner, but if you keep him in his forehand corner, he really struggles, because then you can open up that backhand side and get him on the move playing a defensive backhand. So I feel like he'll hit a lot of winners and forcing errors off the forehand. But I feel like, Shane, and I don't know what your numbers say, there's a lot more errors that do come off the forehand wing of Nadal, especially on fast, hard balls. And also the fast, probably first serve would probably be a challenging one for Nadal to be able to get the shape that he wants on the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of things in that which Zverev can use. And the fact that he's big, strong, tall, he has the power of both his forehand and backhand to rush Nadal. The other thing is he can take the ball earlier. So inside the court, particularly the backhand on the rise, he's able to do that, which not many players can do. And I did touch on sort of Djokovic being the other one that can do that quite well. So that's one of the reasons why I think if we're talking about this again, when we crunch the numbers, we're saying he should be attacking the forehand. So still have the variety to be able to go back in. I might move into the second one, and that was the serve, and Mark touched on it before. Same concept, on the first serve, go to the Nadal strength, and we're saying 65% of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big ploy, and obviously by going to the strength, you can then open up the weaker side. When I say weaker, Nadal's backhand is not weak by any way, shape, or form, but what he can do from the forehand to the backhand is a very different situation. The forehand obviously can do so much damage with the ball shape and spin, and the speed he can hit it at is incredible. And obviously you want to be able to hold your ground. Nadal's ploy when he plays is force you back, create some angles, get you on the move, dictate with his forehand. You know, Djokovic plays it really well where he can hold his ground on his double-handed backhand. He can change direction and not stay in that forehand-to backhand rally. You know, if you let Nadal go his forehand to your backhand, get you high and heavy, you're going to be shifting back off the baseline too often, lose court position, and then he just dominates from there. So, you know, I think it's all about trying to make sure Nadal just can't set up. And Zverev's done it really well in the past where he's been able to, you know, punch a backhand down the line and change direction and get him on the move. And I think that is where you can really get Nadal and get him off balance. But, you know, he's got to be able to hold his ground in this situation.
The other big thing to sort of think about as well, Nadal, and the data shows this as well, he's not a big return winner player. So he doesn't actually crank a winner off the return often. He'll set it up. He's attacking, don't be wrong, but he's trying to set it up for the next shot and the next shot after. So going to the forehand and taking away his ability to set up subsequent shots by rushing him for pace, it really sets you up well in the point. And Zverev's got a big serve. He should be using it as much as possible.
Yeah, he's got, and Zverev's got long levers, you know, long levers in terms of length of arm, and he's so tall and he can really pop the ball. He can get a lot more momentum and generate more speed due to those factors. And, you know, I think he has to utilize that in this match to be able to penetrate Nadal. And if he doesn't utilize that, Nadal's going to be penetrating Zverev's court. And you can't allow him to be able to do that and give him time and space. So Zverev's ploy has to be take time and space away. It has to be to come forward and not allow Nadal to set up and take the advantage.
Yeah, and the next point really is we know Nadal's plan to right-handers. He's going to go to that backhand corner. So Zverev needs to expect to get a lot of backhands. But I think what we would be suggesting to him is he needs to be aggressive on those backhands. Try and take that away. Psychologically, tell Nadal, I'm not afraid of you going to my backhand. I can attack you still with it. And the only times I've seen Nadal a little bit psychologically beaten on court is when Djokovic has really taken away that ability for Nadal to find a spot and attack in that backhand corner. And I think this is something we should be trying to explore with Zverev as well.
Yeah, I think Djokovic done that amazingly well against Rafa. And I know fifth set, the Australian Open final, I think it would be 2018 or 19. You can correct me. You're a guru at the numbers. But where Federer in that fifth set, he was down, I think, 3-1. And then he just went, you know what? I'm stepping into everything. And he just took away Nadal's time and space. And that, you know, is another example of that's creating a recipe for success, because other players have done that in the past and been successful at it. Nadal had been notorious for being able to keep Federer off the baseline, you know, pushing him back. And if Zverev doesn't hold his ground in this situation, then Nadal's going to take that court space away from him. And you can't allow Nadal to move Zverev around. If he's moving Zverev around, Zverev's a bit of a taller guy, struggles in his movement a little bit. And if you get him on the move, then, you know, he's going to be in trouble. So Zverev has to hold ground on that backhand wing. And like you said, maybe change direction in the Djokovic way.
There are real sort of plans for Zverev. We might flip it and look at if we were advising Nadal. This one is a bit easier because I suppose we've got the historical record of Nadal having so many wins against Zverev. One of the things that he's done well, and we've reinforced this, is to use that forehand to the backhand corner. Almost do it as a two to the backhand and one to the forehand, just so you're starting to get Zverev on the move as well.
And it's interesting when you flip it and you think of, okay, let's plan, and you're coaching Nadal and you're sitting in the coach's box and you're thinking, you know, what do I tell, you know, my player? I probably wouldn't say a word. I'd just let him play and go, you know what, dude, you can play okay. So, you know, how about you go out there and do your thing? But No, you're right. I think, you know, it's about playing to your strengths all the time. And even if, you know, you have the best plans in the world, you know, and you get the data from someone like yourself, Shane, I think as a coach, I would be, you know, really stressing the fact that, hey, Rafa, go out and play to your strengths. You know, your forehand to his backhand, you know, dictate with your forehand, get him on the move. You know, that would be the most important thing, you know. And at times, Rafa has been, you know, off on his game. And it's all about going back to what you're really good at. And what he's really good at is playing high, heavy, shape to the backhand corner, you know, plenty of margin, plenty of space, plenty of height, you know, push the opponent back and you dictate from there.
All those things Mark said, and we've talked in previous episodes about how robust that pattern is for him. So he can do that almost with a blindfold on.
Yep.
The other thing I think on serve, what he's done well against Zverev is mix it up, actually. He mixes it up more against Zverev than he does against a lot of the other guys in the top 50. And he still goes predominantly to the backhand side, but he hits some T-serves, but he also uses the body serve, jamming Zverev.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the body serve on a taller player, and this is something that a lot of our listeners can take with them. When you're playing taller players, they have longer arms, longer legs, you know, this big reach, which is really hard to get them on the move because they can reach so far. But what you can really do well is jam them up, because they want space to be able to use their long levers to create power. But if we can take away that time, if we can take away that space, jam them up, it's the next ball you can attack on. It doesn't need to be the serve. So I think it's important that we understand that obviously Zverev is a taller player. You look at guys like Berdych or like Isner or, you know, Ivo Karlovic, and these guys can reach a long way, but they really struggle when you jam them. And that's a great ploy that Nadal obviously uses to his advantage, is he jams up Zverev for space, and then he's not able to then penetrate the court like he would normally, therefore setting up a really easy second shot or easier second shot to be able to dictate and create some width in the match. And that's what Nadal wants to do against Zverev, is create width in the match. Zverev wants to create the match to be narrow because Zverev's movement isn't great. So, you know, he wants to keep the ball up and down the middle, but Nadal wants to create the angles and go, you know what, let's play a lateral game and let's play a movement game. So that's where the difference lies between the two players.
Finally, and this is one I was surprised to see, that Nadal actually used more on clay than the other surfaces, but coming forward, so Nadal comes forward, and particularly against Zverev, at about the fifth, sixth shot in the rally. So 4, 5, 6, he's at the net. And I suppose if you look at the shots preceding that, he's doing everything to try and get Zverev out of position in the court. So I think it's a plan that's worked well, and I'd encourage him to keep doing that.
Yeah, and I think Zverev isn't the greatest defensive player. I think we all know that. I think in offense, you know, and this is where I think the numbers hopefully will tell us a story, and we can dive deeper into this as we go along into another episode, Shane. But I think defensively, Zverev isn't anywhere near the top guys. You know, offensively, I think he's great and he can really pop the ball and do really some really good things. But I'm a big believer that defense wins championships. Defense wins Grand Slams. Defense wins premierships in different team sports. It's the defense that sets apart these players. And once Nadal gets Zverev on a defense, he just comes in and gives him no court to work with, you know, because he's reaching, he finds it very hard to be able to do anything off the reach. And then he takes away his court space. And that's exactly what you need to do against players that, you know, are longer limbed, are taller and like to penetrate the court, you know, through power and dictate from the center of the court. Once you get him on the move, you know, I think like Nadal does, he gets in and finishes a point from the net, which is a great ploy. And I think Nadal is a much better defensive player than Zverev, and I think, you know, they're both pretty similar in offense, but, you know, I think Nadal's worked out that if you get him on the move, get him pretty quick.
That was us giving our plays on a hypothetical matchup. Certainly one I look forward to seeing these guys play when the tour resumes, but for hopefully another couple of years. I'm very keen to see the development of Zverev. He's certainly come on, done extremely well really at his age to have so many Masters titles. He probably hasn't put it together in slams as much as he would like, but we did see a semi-final run the AO, so I think it's all heading in the right trajectories. Mark, I'd love to keep doing this kind of analysis with you in future episodes.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing to look at, because as coaches, we probably need to learn to be better at this breakdown. And the more you can sort of break down little 1% and 2% things in opponents, it's really important. But on the flip side, it's really important to play to your strengths, as we've always spoken about on this show. And you know, if you keep to your strengths and then, you know, highlight one or two areas of your opponent, I think then you're going to hold yourself in a really strong position to win a lot of matches. And we hope this has helped you out there to understand how we would break down a player or players in particular. And we'll go into this a bit further as we go along too. I think there's more players we can start to break down, and they might come hunting us down, Shane. we might need to hire some bodyguards. But thanks once again for your numbers. You know, as always, you're the man with the numbers, and I really appreciate you spending time breaking down these players as you did today. And, you know, again, you're looking slick, and the data is slick, and it matches the hairdo. So well done again, Shane. Thanks for joining us. That was Shane Leonage from Data Driven Sports Analytics. You can find him all over social media. He's the man with the numbers. You know, hunt him down, because he has some incredible information and insights into the game. And I'm Mark Sepulveda from the Tennis Menu. Thanks again for joining us on another episode of Crunching the Numbers.